There is no relationship that comes without conflict. Like, it is the price of connection. The price of community comes with conflict or comes with challenge or difficulty. Like, it doesn't mean it's bad because you've had a fight. Recovering from that makes your friendship stronger. And I think we've lost some of that, that you cannot have that kind of vulnerability without, and that intimacy without sitting in the discomfort that you might get it wrong. You can't put yourself out there and never get rejected. So sitting with the good stuff comes with not such great stuff, and it's not in equal parts. You want the good stuff to outweigh, but that's just the price of the ticket. That's what it costs. I've had a young dad recently say, you know, he's taken less work to have more days actively parenting, and he's like, I pictured this utopia kind of thing of there'd be a whole bunch of other dads and we'd go to the playground, and he's like, it's really lonely and doesn't know then what to do with that. And so I guess what I'm trying to encourage people to do is sit in the discomfort and reach out and say, you know, send the voice memo saying, look, this is all I can manage right now, or, you know, have the group chat and say, who's free for a talk right now, or it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Is anyone out and about? And see kind of what happens.
I think this aversion to cringe or doing anything too sincere is stopping a lot of people from asking for what they need or for initiating something on the basis that it might seem too earnest or too cringe or whatever. And now, are we going to get now performative post-cringe? I mean, yeah, probably. That's going to be probably really cringe, though the irony is high on this.
Hello and welcome to This Complex Life. Today I have a different topic to the last few around friendships. Now, we know relationships are important. I've talked a lot about couples' relationships and parents with their teenagers and children, but less so about friendships. So I am joined by Steph Clark to talk about friends. Welcome, Steph.
Hi, Marie. Thanks for having me.
I thought I'd go with this sort of topic around what's the future of friendships, and maybe the subtext or subheading is, are we getting lonelier?
Wow. Where to start on those two big topics? Future friendship. And so in the work I do as a futurist, it's very important to say that, you know, this is about possibility and probability rather than prediction, because no one knows the future. And anyone who does say that they do is probably trying to take your money in some way, shape or form. So, or sell you something. So yeah, with all of those nice caveats in place. Yeah, so the future of friendship is really interesting, I think, particularly as the moment we're in this kind of horrible soup of this apparent loneliness epidemic. And I don't know, I've seen there's a lot of headlines about a loneliness epidemic and the outcomes of that, or the kind of outputs, I suppose, of that. And also some things suggesting that actually maybe that's not the case. But I don't know, the feeling is that that is a real feeling. Now, the ways of measuring that, I guess, are maybe messy and imperfect, as a lot of social science kind of is. So there's kind of this loneliness epidemic, and at a time where kind of inequality is rising, and also we've got, you know, things around the world, we've got wars and genocides and land grabs and authoritarian governments and all sorts of other things happening as well. So that's kind of making, you know, there's a lot more tension in the world in terms of our, you know, the relationships and conversations and things we can or can't have with our friends. There's that. And then we've got the robots as well. So, with the robots, you know, when everything else feels hard, you know, whether that's trying to keep a job feels hard, whether, you know, being able to afford eggs, you know, feels hard still as well. We've got all of that. And of course, we're looking for maybe some more frictionless experiences of the relationships and the conversations and the connections we're having, which robots are pretty good at doing, because we can tune them to be exactly as we want them to be. And, you know, even more so with some of the more advanced models and apps and tools and things that are coming out. And I think that sends us towards quite a danger, or potentially can send us in quite a dangerous slide away from each other, because it's just too much hard work. You know, you've got a whole podcast based on all the problems between other people. So I mean, why would we bother, you know, in that particular world?
The childish part of me wants to ask, are there any robots throughout history that you would want to be friends with?
Robots throughout history?
Oh, or through, okay. I mean, I said Hollywood.
Oh, I don't know, like maybe No, I'm thinking more, maybe more some like the monsters from Monsters, Inc. seems a bit nicer than some of the robots that are from various TV shows and things.
See, I love the show Big Hero 6. I would quite like that because it's talking about, it's less frictionless. It is there as a companion just for you 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Right? So that's interesting. You've mentioned, and I've read some of the stuff you've posted, which was really interesting around this idea of friction, but around initiating. Mm. And there are some people that I see in my therapy room who are terrified to ask a friend to do something, and they'll say it in the most roundabout way that the other person has no idea that that's the request. So they might say something like, hey, on the weekend, I might be in the area. Let me know if you're free, right? That is so general and so vague. And the other person's like, oh, yeah, maybe. Let me know when you're nearby. And then nothing happens.
Yeah.
What have you been observing, or what conversations have you been having with people around this idea of initiating plans, of putting yourself out there?
It's really interesting. I think there's a couple of different things. And if I think about the kind of slightly younger generation, so I guess the Gen Z, for want of a better kind of generic, meaningless demographic description, there's this other thing happening as well. And I think, yes, there's this kind of initiation gap of everyone sort of wanting better, closer, more fun, connected relationships and friendships, but no one's kind of initiating those, or everyone's waiting for someone else to initiate them. So there's that. And there's also then this other sort of subtopic around cringe culture and this aversion that younger people have in particular, it seems, again, you know, very generic, around being seen as too sincere or being seen as too maybe within that needy, but certainly this kind of this sincerity or this element of cringe. And we're starting to see that kind of bubble up in some of the conversations online and things like that now around, you know, post-cringe. And which again, I mean, that's a whole other topic. But I think this aversion to cringe or doing anything too sincere is stopping a lot of people from asking for what they need or for initiating something on the basis that it might seem too earnest or too cringe or whatever. And now are we going to get now performative post cringe? I mean, yeah, probably. That's going to be probably really cringe. So the irony is high on this. We've also got then alongside that this kind of surveillance culture. And I've been talking, I've had quite a few conversations with the younger people around their friendships and how they connect and, you know, some of the conversations. And there's some really interesting kind of, I suppose, dynamics there around different, you know, things like different platforms. You'd only have this type of conversation on Snapchat and you only have that conversation on like iMessages for the most serious conversations, because you want to keep the receipts and you want to kind of have evidence of it. Whereas other things maybe disappear or it's a bit more casual. But there's also this piece around this sort of surveillance culture where people, younger people, struggle to or seem to struggle to communicate in the moment a bit more. So that everything has to be planned and text and messaged, you know, in a kind of slightly more edited way rather than being able to be responded to, you know, in a one-on-one kind of interaction. So I think when you put all of that together, you end up with this quite, like you said, that kind of perfect example, that kind of this kind of very vague, non-committal, loose, you know, kind of existence or communication that then no one's really getting what they need or what they want from, and no one ends up any further ahead of where they were or closer to what they wanted.
So what could people do instead?
I mean, initiate would be my...
But they think that's initiating. So when you say initiate, what does that look like? You're coming towards the end of the week. You realize you have maybe not so many plans on the weekend. You're feeling a bit lonely and you have a list of acquaintances or friend-ish people in your phone, on your socials. What does that look like?
Mm. Someone recently was telling me, and I had this one conversation that I've heard a couple other similar variations of this, which I thought was quite good, is people actually just being really sick of the scheduling that comes with friendship and adult relationships and things as well, which I think is, yeah, that's somewhat separate thing, but related. And so what they've started doing is being like, I'm going to be here at this time on this day. If anyone's in, let me know. Oh, if anyone's in, I'll see you there. If you're not, cool, I'll see you next time. And in the group chat that this you know, particular friend was telling me about in this particular, or actually two different, I think it's two different group chats that she's got where people have started doing that. It's just made it so much more casual. And particularly if there is more of a group chat, maybe two people have decided to go to a yoga class at 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning and then go for coffee afterwards. But then, you know, it's not like trying to organize the whole group to do it, but two people are committed to it. Great. And then everyone else can join if they want. And it just kind of, again, it just takes that load away, that kind of logistical mental load away from organizing, or the overwhelm of being like, oh, I've got these eight people, how are we going to get kind of thing. But then also means that you are still doing something and putting it out there, and then people can kind of opt in or out as necessary. But also it role models that is the way we can actually make it easier to hang out with each other.
Yeah, I've started doing that with camping trips. So I'm an avid camper, now caravaner, so a little bit luxe. Mm. And I've just started going through the public holidays, booking them in and saying, going through a few friends, this is where we'll be. We've got two spots. Whoever wants it, this is how many we can fit on the site.
Yeah.
And starting to do a bit more of that, because I find the back and forth, like I loathe the responsibility. I want to throw my phone in the nearest ocean. Oh, I can't. Oh, I can. It's just now it's like I prefer that containment. And so I've even done it recently with the movies. I booked the movie I wanted to see with my partner, messaged a friend who I thought would be like, we're going to the movies this time, this day. If you want to come, we'll have dinner beforehand. And then where are you sitting? These seats, great. We've booked right behind you. Excellent.
Yeah. Easy. Yeah.
But that takes vulnerability for some people. I don't find it particularly difficult, so I don't see it as something I need to think that hard about. But when you were talking about this roundabout way of communicating, it feels very scripted as a way to protect from something, fear of maybe rejection or getting it wrong, or there's something there. How do you see that coming through the conversations you're having?
It is that. And I think it is, it is a fear of rejection. I don't know how, and I'm not a psychologist or social scientist to be able to kind of pinpoint the thing or whatever, but I wonder how much of it, just again from sort of other around conversations I've had around this, that is this sense that anyone can be caught out by being awkward or be doing it wrong or whatever. And there's this kind of, and that comes up in sort of cyberbullying in a kind of more extreme version, but through to just seeing constantly that, oh, look at that person being embarrassed because no one turned up at their thing and someone was there filming, just stuff like that, where they've been fed, people have been fed a diet of people being embarrassed and not wanting that to happen to them, even if it is in a really small, quiet way that wouldn't necessarily be caught on camera or anything like that. And I remember I've spoken to a few kind of educators who have been, teaching for a period of time, and they've seen that shift as well of kids not wanting, and kids not wanting to try stuff anymore because they don't know who's going to be filming or they don't know who's going to be doing, whatever. So, particularly in some things like drama classes and, other kind of maybe slightly more expressive classes or sort of vocations, that is really limiting the edges that people are kind of willing to push. And I think then it seems like that would be something that would extrapolate into other parts of life as well.
I totally get that. I recently did a Christmas in July party, and it's like, what if I'm there with all the food and no one shows up?
You've got loads of leftovers.
It was that, but there's also, we can't deny that it actually does hurt when you've sent out invitations and people have an RSVP. Now, RSVP means if you can't come, you also say no. You don't just ignore it. And then people got sick last minute or someone's child or something happened. But it is when you've put in a lot of work and effort and coordinated and planned and budgeted and prepared, how do we hold people accountable to also start showing up and not be so flaky?
One of the things I've tried to do, because I had that experience a few years ago now, I think it was maybe 2018, for my birthday, I invited, six people. I had six spaces at my dinner table, or five, excluding me. So I thought, right, I'm going to invite five people who have really made an impact on my year. So about a month before my birthday, I sent them all a nice message of like, hey, thanks for, whatever it is that we've done together, or, the time we've spent together this year, and I'd love to have. And I thought it'd be a nice way of bringing different people together who, some from more work, some from more, hobbies that I was doing, but also to recognize that actually every year there's people kind of in and out at different times as well. Anyway, So month four, I put it in people, you know, sort of sent the message out and then didn't really kind of follow up or anything. And, you know, sort of a week before, people, oh, is that still happening? And I think that to me is like the worst, like, message is that, oh, is that still happening? I'm thinking, well, yeah, I mean, we put it in the diary like a few weeks ago, so why wouldn't it be? And so then like someone's like, oh, actually something else has come up, you know, kind of thing. And I was just so like sad and heartbroken about it that I then just didn't do anything for my birthday that year. Yeah, boohoo, poor me, tiny violin. But then a couple of years ago in 2023, I was like, right, 5 years has passed. I can try. COVID kind of deleted some birthdays, so we'll kind of ignore those. I decided, yeah, to do something different. And so what I did was sort of similar again. I sort of sent a message out and just again, say six people around the dinner table or five, excluding me, and sent them a nice message and sort of got the people in who were in, put it in the diaries. And then basically every week for the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks, I sent like a little update, like, oh, this is who else is going to be coming, and sort of sent them the thing of Viren's coming and he's a DJ and he does all these cool things. And I sent this message which had a little like one sentence about each person. And it was kind of like a fun fact about them that was nothing to do with their work. And given that none of these people had met each other before, what was really cool is that number one, everyone turned up. There was no last minute, like, oh, can I come kind of things. And also by the end of the night, a couple of people are, oh, like none of us have talked about work at all. And how interesting is that, that as adults who've got together that didn't know each other, that we didn't just end up defaulting to that. And a lot of it, they said, you know, people said was because I kind of, again, set the tone of like, these are the types of conversations we're going to be having. And it was super fun. And yeah, and it was, you know, it felt kind of risky in a little bit as well, because I was like, oh, people are going to be like, oh, is this too much? Or, you know, those types of things. But I just think, well, yeah, the feeling of, you know, having no one turn up to your birthday party was also quite sad. And to be clear, I'm the one that didn't go ahead. I didn't sit there with like, you know, sort of cheese and pineapple on a stick and, you know, finger sandwiches and no one turned up. I just cancelled it like a week before. Yeah. Anyway, so I think it's just that piece of actually sometimes you've got to put more. I think there's kind of two things to me at the moment. It's sometimes we need to put less effort into stuff and make it easier, like the kind of examples we were sharing, and actually having more low lift kind of social connection experiences. And in some of the situations, we actually need to put a bit more effort in and actually fully Priya Parker the gathering that we're having so that people do turn up in the right way and you kind of invite the right people for the right reasons and we have the right connection.
Yeah, I get what you're saying about the birthday, because I've had a birthday, it would have probably maybe been a little bit earlier than 2018, where I think everyone assumed someone else would have done something. Mm. And I was at home in my jammies and my birthday fell on a Saturday with not a single plan.
Oh.
And it's like that stuff's really painful, especially if you don't belong to one kind of really cohesive group where it's sort of it's not a waiting for an invite. They just sort of be like, so what are we doing for you? But like they initiate it and that's kind of your group culture. But now fast forward to I'm at an age where a lot of people have kids and that creates a very different dynamic where they don't get enough time on their own, let alone want to nurture some friendships. And so a Friday night could come around and they're quite contented if the family's around to just chill out at home because there's always something there. It's kind of like when you were younger and you had housemates, sometimes that was half the fun. It's not like you're having a party, but if you lived with housemates, that can become a gathering. And so how do you start to navigate that change where some of those, and I'm just talking about my female friends because that's the ones I'm closest to, some of those events might come around and they're actually disappointed that they might just get a really boring gift like fucking slippers or poorly sized pajamas. And they're like, seriously, is this what I've become now? And they start to struggle with that identity and really wish one of their girlfriends did something, but also haven't been able to nurture that relationship or have forgotten that, you know, they're celebrating their friend's birthday, especially if you don't have kids. They forget and they start celebrating the kid's birthday. So how do you adjust to maintaining that friendship when I think I'm noticing that my friends think what they're doing is boring, so won't invite me.
Mm.
And so then I get to miss out on being a part of the important moments for them.
Yeah.
Even if it is 8 a.m. with the takeaway coffee watching the kids on the monkey bars, it doesn't bother me.
Mm.
But there's a whole different shift there and that feels a bit more relevant to the age I'm at the moment. Can you speak to how that's been talked about in some of the, I guess, conversations you've been having?
Yeah. Over the last couple of weeks, I've run a couple of virtual sessions for small groups around the future of friendship. And one of the things we did at the beginning of the first session was talk about the kind of the present of friendships, and it got people to kind of stick up on the, you know, virtual whiteboard things that they're currently experiencing, noticing. And that demographic of coming to those sessions definitely skewed a bit older, kind of 40s, 50s. And so there was a lot of conversation around the kids piece and friends with kids, or some of them had kids, but you know, it was probably a decent split of people who did or didn't. And so it was interesting hearing kind of, you know, both sides, for want of a better kind of phrase, and people who were like, oh, you know, I lost some friends, you know, particularly a couple of people I know who came to that session probably more in their 50s, who are like, oh yeah, some friends who I've not seen for basically 20 years, but we were really close, who have now reemerged out of the fog of parenting. The kids are more independent and stuff now, and some of them are, you know, young adults, obviously, and now like, okay, cool, let's do something fun. And you know, wanting to kind of reconnect, which is really cool. You know, that is, it's nice to see someone who's, you know, 15, 20 years later than me, and being like, oh, okay, some of those friends who have definitely kind of faded away at the moment. But then also the other phase of that around people who, you know, who've got friends who are just coming out of the first kind of three to 5 years. And again, it's, you know, that's a different kind of phase as well from what I understand. So again, they're sort of regaining a little bit more time of their own, you know, not completely, obviously, but again, a kind of re-emerging like, oh, hey, can we hang out or can we do something? But like you say, that's, you know, wanting or needing maybe to do that in a bit of a different way. And it's interesting as well, talking to friends who have different kind of setups in terms of their kind of family structures and all the rest, who the ones who I kind of can connect with the most are the ones who in their family unit, in their partnerships, have got a really clear, I suppose, definition, for want of a better word, around roles, and actually a really healthy relationship around roles, where it's not just based on some kind of gender norm or something like that. Like they really have nutted out, this is what works, this is how we do it. You know, one, you know, and it's all, and all of them are different. So one of them have got, one of the couples I know have, you know, basically nights, they've got three kids and they have kind of different nights off. So I know that if I want to hang out with my friend, that he is free on these particular nights of the week, and his wife has different nights of the week. And so they have a real sense of being able to connect. And I know for him that when he wants to catch up with some of his male friends who have kids, yeah, you know, it's very much like, oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed that night and that kind of thing. And because there's no real, just regular conversation. This is more your kind of field, I'm sure. Like there's no real regular conversation around like your own time and space and relationships and all the rest outside of the family. So yeah, so there's those things, but there's also, but for all of these conversations, the theme was around that organizing piece as well, around how do we just make this easy? Can it just be that, you know, I'm going to be at the playground from 8 till 9 or, you know, whatever, but I'm going to walk from this cafe, so let's meet there. And again, where we can kind of, you know, without kind of productivity hacking our friendships, because that feels pretty miserable, but where we can kind of multitask to an extent. And, you know, people have shared before around how once a week, them and their really close friend will go and do their grocery shopping together. And they'll have a chat as they walk around the supermarket, and they might get a coffee before, you know, that kind of thing. They might do something around it as well. But again, just kind of making some of those things fun, or co-working from each other's houses once a week or something along those lines. So again, just kind of finding ways to make that work in your life rather than it always having to be this add-on, because otherwise, yeah, that's when these things feel hard.
I think the word that keeps coming back, it's frictionless. That the friction seems to be the point, and sometimes the friction's emotional. And there's one thing I've noticed with some friends and some clients as well who have new babies, and they're up at all sorts of hours of the night. And they're actually, it's interesting because when I was doing my little research for the episode I did on AI and affairs, and I think it's going to be another episode because it's so interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. People were talking about how they can use the bot, especially the voice function, at any time of the day, and it just responds. And in one of the podcasts I heard where people were talking about this, the other podcast host was like, well, but you can voice memo me anytime. And they're like, well, I feel bad too. And so it just made me think of, I have had those fluctuating work where sometimes I am up in the weird hours of the night, really working on something or doing an international podcast. So if I had, I use the app Marco Polo, but if it was a voice memo, or I think WhatsApp has the inbuilt video feature, video note. If one of my friends who was breastfeeding at 3 o'clock in the morning sent me just a stream of consciousness and I saw that, I would reply, and we could still keep contact. So I think there's also peace for people where they don't want to be too much, or they don't want to be annoying. And they're not giving a person the chance to say yes or no. They're just removing that option.
Yeah.
And so
just in your more professional opinion, how much of that do you think comes into this kind of idea of identity of motherhood, therefore I must be this, not that, and this kind of I must remove myself from the world or it won't be available to me?
I haven't had that conversation. I don't think it's necessarily that. I think it's you tend to maybe find things in common with people you spend a lot of time with, mm-hmm. and so you might then start defaulting to the same people in the same routine. And I've had a young dad recently say, you know, he's got a relationship where he's taken less work to have more days actively parenting. And he's like, I pictured this utopia kind of thing of there'd be a whole bunch of other dads and we'd go to the playground. And he's like, it's really lonely and doesn't know then what to do with that. And so I guess what I'm trying to encourage people to do is sit in the discomfort and reach out and say, you know, send the voicemail saying, look, this is all I can manage right now, or, you know, have the group chat and say, who's free for a talk right now, or it's 5 o'clock in the morning, is anyone out and about, and see kind of what happens, and the boundaries on the other person to enforce. So if someone's like, I don't answer my phone after 9, then just put your phone on silent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if the person let's say you have to leave your phone on because you're, I don't know, from your work and those pings, you can mute a specific person or you can only accept calls from specific numbers. So the tech has allowed us to set those boundaries to protect our space. But I think people are really scared to reach out. And
do you think there's this piece, which I know Brené Brown has talked about around, that if I have to ask for it, then it's not real?
Yeah. You should just know that that's what I need, right?
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, yeah, what's the point? Yeah.
But I think there's a big part of that. And then there's another part that is, I think we can get a little bit lazy and self-absorbed. And so sometimes we might need to make an effort for the people that matter to us. And so if you've got a friend who's like, you're like, do you want to do something for your birthday? And like, oh, no, not really. Don't just be like, well, fine, yeah, whatever. Then say, I would love to take you out for dinner. I'm free these nights. Like, make the effort, help reach out. And so it's a dialogue both ways. Some people, we don't get taught how to do this. We get thrown in schools with a whole bunch of kids. You might do some group projects. Some people have great role modeling and some don't. And I think the saddest thing is that disconnection, that loneliness, I'm seeing it across the board. And I think some people would be surprised that I'm quite chatty and I'll do podcasts, and I still have moments where I'm like, a whole week has gone by and I have not heard from a single friend. And so I think some people also need to make a bit of effort and water those friendships, water that garden, because you can't just rely on your kids for fulfillment or your partner, or it will look different. It still needs watering.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much there, isn't there? And it's just so, and again, like in that context of with everything else. Anything. And it's interesting as well, like even at the beginning of the episode where you talked about, you know, you could talk a lot about relationships and people, you know, sort of parental and kids relationships and all the rest, and the friendship thing that hasn't really kind of come up as much yet. And yet, you know, some, you know, for a lot of people, when you talk to them, they're like, oh no, my friends are like the most important, blah, blah, blah. But then also they're often the ones that we will let down, let go, or, you know, more time will pass kind of between seeing them or speaking to them or whatever. And you know, we can't be constantly in touch with everyone, of course. That's, you know, there are phases and seasons and all the rest. But at the same time, like you say, you can suddenly get into a place where you're like, oh wait, a week's gone past, or, you know, whatever period of time has gone past and you haven't kind of spoken to a friend or, you know, had some connection with them or something. It's easy to do.
The skills are the same. With parent and child, it's different because you're raising a human. Yeah. So developmentally, it's different. But a lot of the skills around noticing and attuning and learning to have tough conversations and honest conversations and circle back to something, there is no relationship that comes without conflict. Like, it is the price of connection. The price of community comes with conflict or comes with challenge or difficulty. Like, it doesn't mean it's bad because you've had a fight. Recovering from that makes your friendship stronger. And I think we've lost some of that, that you cannot have that kind of vulnerability without, and that intimacy without sitting in the discomfort that you might get it wrong. You can't put yourself out there and never get rejected. So sitting with the good stuff comes with not such great stuff. And it's not in equal parts. You want the good stuff to outweigh, but That's the price of the ticket.
Mm.
That's what it costs.
Yeah.
And I think people forget that, or they don't know. They think we've had a fight, that's it, it's over, and we've lost, or maybe we never had really good ways to navigate difference and gather in different ways, or be together with different hobbies or different political ideations or different religious groups. And some of those places of gathering might have been work. Now, I mean, I'm in a very, not remote, I work with one-on-one clients, but I don't have a big team around me that we all have lunch together. Some people work completely remote, if no longer going to a central place. Where do you get that from? And so there's kind of two pieces in that. One is how do you gather, and the other is the skills that we need to maintain those friendships.
Saw a thing on Instagram that is the annoyance is the price for community, the price you pay for community. And I just think that's so true. And also just something that, like, you know, as you were just saying, feels like is sort of sliding away as we become, you know, more used to being, you know, frictionless existences, or not really knowing that, oh, actually I can be a bit annoyed with that person or whatever. And I think the other thing, certainly something that's a bit of a bugbear of mine, is, you know, every other, you know, you go onto your Google kind of homepage or something with the recommended articles, or just your algorithm on social media, and it's like 5 red flags that your friend's a narcissist, and like 10 red flags that this person shouldn't be in your life, and all this kind of thing. So when you're kind of bombarded with that as well, and most of those are pretty questionable, it seems, in terms of the actual content of those videos. But if all you're being fed is that actually quite normal behaviors sometimes are some like pathology of some sociopath that you've got in your life, then of course you're going to be like, well, okay, well, that person said that thing, and maybe they actually meant that, and maybe they're actually a narcissist, and maybe all of a sudden, no one around you is kind of safe. And therefore you can very easily be like, oh, well, I need to like remove them from my life, or I need to kind of, you know, exit that friendship relationship or whatever. And of course, there are some definitely problematic people out there, sure, don't be friends with them. But also, there's also a lot of like just normal weird behavior that is, you know, maybe suboptimal in certain situations or whatever. And I'm not saying we have to forgive really awful things, but I don't know. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff we're just like, that's just them.
Awkward, messy humans.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, funny enough, because I would think a red flag is cutting off all your friends because you think they've got red flags.
Yeah, like, right? You are the red flag suddenly.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because it's a really easy way. It's a bit of a cop out to not show up and have the tough conversation. It is sort of saying, you're the problem. And if you've got this in multiple relationships, there's a good chance it's you. There's a good chance you've either subconsciously created a dynamic that has allowed that to happen, or you're struggling to have a conversation. And so if it's happening a lot, then it's worth holding a mirror up and saying, what role am I playing in this? And that's one of the most confronting bits in therapy, is not what's wrong with the other, it's what am I doing in this? Because people are forgetful, they're imperfect, they double book, and sometimes you let people get away with that. So then that creates that sort of expectation. And so it's interesting, the red flags thing. I mean, most people that I have met are not toxic. Most people, and I've worked in psychiatric hospitals, are not diagnosed narcissists. It is super, super, super rare to have that kind of malicious intent to harm. Most other people, some people are assholes.
Sure.
Some are having a bad day. Some are activated and provoked by something. And most people are messy, awkward humans.
And some people just aren't your people. Like, that's also okay. Like, and some people, you know, as we go through life and we get older and all the rest, become not your people or your person or whatever. And it's like, that's also okay. Like, that, it doesn't need to be a whole kind of drama every time. But yeah, I think, like you say, most people are just fine and weird and messy and human.
Yeah. So if people are listening to this and, you know, you wish you had one piece of advice, or maybe a couple of pieces of advice, you've had a lot of conversations, you post a lot of content about this. It's definitely, you're thinking about it a lot. And I've looked at your podcast book review. So you've done a lot of reading into this, and we definitely will do that book review at some point.
Oh, yes.
What are some things, some takeaways that you hope people might listen to this and do something different after hearing it?
I'm going to give two contrasting pieces of advice, and that is do less and do more. So I think coming back to that conversation from earlier, so where are the relationships where actually you're over-engineering, trying to catch up, And you can send the message in the group chat like, hey, me and Marie, or you know, me and, or just you are going on this walk at this time in this place, or, you know, whatever it is you want to do, who's with me? Like, where can you make that easier? And or finding ways that kind of fits into everyone's lives, or, you know, whatever that is. So where can you do less? And maybe it is even just getting back to someone just coming over and sitting on the sofa and having a chat and buy some nice tea or something like that, or some nice biscuit. Like, you know, you doesn't have to be going out and doing a thing every time. I really miss those kind of bedroom hangs that you would have as a teenager, where you just go around your friend's house. You knew where they were because they're always at home. And obviously now you know where they are because everyone's got their notification or their location shared on their phone. So yeah, you just nip round and you're like, oh, hey. And then you just sort of sit around listening to music, chatting, and maybe watching a film, maybe going out to get some snacks at some point. But yeah, just doing more of that. I just think long, continuous kind of time together is great. So there's that. And then where can you make a bit more effort? So whether it is the friend's birthday or whether it is your own birthday, and it doesn't have to be birthdays. And actually the book that I'm working on, the original title was actually Beyond Birthdays, on the basis that we shouldn't just be celebrating, you know, once a year being like, oh, let's go for drinks again, let's go for brunch. You know, it doesn't need to be just around your birthday. Anyway, find new things to celebrate maybe is the sub point of this. But, you know, where can you actually make a bit more effort and bring different people together and send an extra couple of messages to kind of make sure people are in and let them know that this is going to be fun or different or whatever it is that you want from that thing. Like, design it so that happens. And I think, well, we need a bit more initiation. We need a bit more maybe intent and design with some of the stuff as well. And, you know, sometimes that feels kind of counterintuitive because you're like, oh yeah, but I want it to be relaxed. I want it to be this. Like, it won't be unless you actually design it so it is that. And, you know, maybe when we talk about the art of gathering another time, we can talk about exactly that. You can't be a chill host, as Priya says.
Yeah, it has to be, that intentionality is really important. I do like what you said earlier about the example you use of someone doing their grocery shopping together. And I think that's the kind of stuff that we used to do when we were younger. You kind of, like you're saying, you'd hang out and you'd do your errands. And I think that can be a really beautiful time for people to offer that connection for friends. But be really clear, because I know I'm always scared of overstaying my welcome because I am quite a relaxed guest. Mm-hmm. So if someone is okay for me to just help myself to stuff, oh, we'll go, I'll make a cup of tea, especially the people I know well.
Yeah, yeah.
And for some other people that might be seen as rude. So I don't mind sitting there drinking my tea while they prepare dinner. I'm happy to chop something up.
Yeah, yeah.
If they need to go do, you know, bath and book for the kid, I can tidy up. So I'm okay to do that, but I also don't want to overstay my welcome. So how can people put that out there a little bit more of like, look, you know, I've got to go to Costco. Do you want to come with me? Or yeah, I'm really busy running groceries, but yeah, you could come to the Vic Market. Like some of those things I think we forget can be used as moments for connection, even a phone call while you're doing that.
Yeah.
I've got a habit with my brother. Whenever one of us calls the other, we're usually walking. And if the other's free, then it's like, oh, I'm going to put tools down and walk with you. And we walk, we can hear all the noises and the birds and the funny things. But that's become just sort of a, while we're walking, we're talking. And I often call my poor mum every time I'm driving somewhere. She's like, what do you need? I'm like, it's a really long drive. She's like, you already called me twice. It's still a really long drive.
Yeah.
And so linking up some of those commute parts or mandatory
between times.
With intention.
My friend Simon, whenever he phones, the way I normally answer it is like, where are you off to? Because he almost phones me in the car, and I will do the same to him as well. So that's become a bit of a kind of joint kind of, you know, amusing kind of thing that we now just becomes a bit more of a default, which is fun. So, but I think using this, and I think where you know, if you've read something that, you know, in this, or, you know, you could take in something from this podcast, using that as your catalyst and being like, hey, you know, messaging a friend, send them a link to this. And this isn't just like a big spruik, but send the link to this, like, hey, I was listening to this podcast, we're talking about this. Do you want to try that? Which is really what I'm trying to do with the book that I'm working on as well, which is giving people the opportunity to kind of snap a photo of one of the ideas and be like, oh, people are doing this. Do you want to try that? Just again, like making it kind of as easy as possible for people to initiate and initiate something different and something that maybe works for a bit. Maybe it works over winter, but not over the summer. But again, you find your own rhythm with it as well and you make it your own.
So if someone has sent you this episode, they're saying they want you in their life. Yeah, they love you. They want to connect. They want you to be, you know, to do more together. So if you've shared this with someone, if you're on the receiving end, it's a signal. It's a little flag, little kind of, hello, I'm here. I want to hang out. I want to do something.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for this conversation. I think we could have so many, and maybe when your book is coming out, or when, if you've come across a really interesting topic, we can hash it out.
Thanks, Marie.
And if people want to get in touch with you, what do you offer? What do you do? How can we get one of the 5 coveted dinner invites to yeah. your next birthday?
Well, I don't know. You're running. Well, I don't know. My birthday's the end of November, so you've got a big push for the next 3 months if you want to get on the dinner invites. So
I'm a very reliable friend. If it's in the diary,
yeah, no, you sound happening. Like you would be. I was like, you'd be on the list, I reckon. No flaking from you, which is good. Yes, the best way to find me is a couple of places. So LinkedIn, Steph Clark, Steph with a PH and Clark with an E. And then also on Substack, the Substack is called How to Friend, which is going to be the name of the book when that comes out as well. Those are the best places to find me. And I kind of write on Substack around friendship, and LinkedIn is a bit more about the other work I do as a futurist, which is helping organizations with their strategy and innovation work and thinking about what might happen next and whether their organization is still going to be relevant and sustainable in that future.
Oh, how anxiety provoking. Thanks so much. This was a really great conversation. Hopefully people, it's gotten them thinking about how they can reach out to their friends and sit in some of the discomfort that, you know, evokes for them, I guess.
I hope so. Thanks for having the conversation.
Thank you for listening. To keep the conversation going, head on over to Instagram or LinkedIn and follow me. If you'd like to keep updated with episodes and other interesting things happening in mental health, join my weekly This Complex Life newsletter, where I'll share tools, tips, and insight. There's a link in the show notes. Got a question you want answered? Shoot me an email or a DM. I'd love to hear from you. And if you enjoy the show, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave a rating and a review. It helps other people find the podcast.